so far it has not presented anything that would give us an indication of a larger eruption or a greater hazard.
Cleveland volcano continues erupting in the Aleutian Islands. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, May 6th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, four people are recovering from injuries after an airplane crash near Nutok.
It was foggy. I couldn't even see not even half a mile.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. Alaskan educators can earn a master's degree in educational leadership, special education, and more from the University of Alaska Southeast. Information at uas.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Southeast.
Cleveland volcano in the Aleutian Islands is erupting, but so far it hasn't impacted air travel. KUCB's Stephanie Joyce reports.
Alaska Volcano Observatory scientist in charge, John Power, says Cleveland's activity this week is different from its rumblings in 2011 and 2012.
We've had a number of little explosions at Cleveland beginning about 5 a.m. on Saturday morning, and the most recent one we've been able to verify was this morning about 8 o'clock.
The highest of those explosions reached only about 15,000 feet, too low to interfere with air traffic transiting the region. But in addition to the explosions, Power says Cleveland has also been experiencing a continuous low-level eruption.
Probably producing bits of, maybe some ash that's accumulating perhaps on the summit areas or, some of these, perhaps little tiny low-level explosions that may be going on.
That behavior is new for the volcano, but Power says it's not necessarily cause for concern, especially since the continuous eruptive activity appears to have waned over the last day.
So far, it has not presented anything that would give us an indication of a larger eruption or a greater hazard to come.
Nevertheless, because of the possibility of sudden explosions producing ash clouds that could reach flying altitudes, the observatory has raised the aviation alert level to orange. So far, there's been no rerouting of air traffic. In Alaska, I'm Stephanie Joyce.
An Era Alaska Cessna 207 went down Saturday near the village of Nutok. Some passengers suffered injuries after the plane landed short of the runway and skidded across a local river. But Era is disputing the extent of the injuries. KYUK's Mark Earhart has more.
Around 4 p.m. Saturday, villages in Nutok say visibility was extremely poor.
Oh, it was foggy. I couldn't even see not even half a mile.
Raman Carl is the Nutok agent for Hagland Era. He says his cousin was one of the four people aboard the plane.
She didn't really know that her arm was broken, and she looked all right. I mean, she wasn't the only one who's crying. And these two other passengers, the teacher and the other lady, and the pilot, they were all crying.
Carl says his cousin is currently in an Anchorage hospital awaiting surgery on her arm.
To our knowledge, the pilot had a slight injury. He ended up with some stitches on the side of his eye.
Steve Smith is the director of sales and marketing for Era. He says safety is of the utmost concern for the airline, and to his knowledge, he did not know about any broken bones.
We did have one passenger who had some bruising, and we did fly her to Bethel to be checked out at the hospital there.
Smith says he cannot say what happened on the flight or why the plane went down. As part of his duties as a Hagland Era agent, Carl communicates with incoming pilots via VHF. He says he warned the pilot about the poor visibility just before the crash.
He was 15 minutes out, and I told that pilot, man, it's 0-0. I don't think you'll make it. And then all he said was, yeah, it looks pretty good over here. And I told him again, 0-0. I don't think you'll make it.
The plane went down short of Nutok runway, about 1.5 miles to the southwest. Tribal Administrator Stanley Tom.
And looks like he went a little too low. He was way off. He hit the Ninglick River.
Tom says the river ice was completely solid.
Luckily, it was hard snow Otherwise, they could have flipped, but they didn't. They skidded like about 50 or so many feet.
The Cessna 207 suffered damage to the prop and the wheels, Tom says. Officials from the Federal Aviation Administration are supposed to be out to the village to survey the damage today. Alan Kennitzer with the FAA says the crash happened, quote, under unknown circumstances. Representatives with the National Transportation and Safety Board did not comment in time for this story. In Bethel, I'm Mark Earhart.
At the onset of World War II, the territory of Alaska was seen as too big, too remote, and too sparsely populated to defend. That is, until it was attacked by Japanese forces. In response, a few thousand residents came together to form the Alaska Territorial Guard. Once the war was over, the Guard disbanded, and those who served went back to their daily lives. But they were never formally discharged. Decades later, these guardsmen are now finally getting their discharge papers. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reports that some notable Alaskans are among them.
When Dennis Egan opened up some official-looking mail before heading into work last week, he wasn't expecting to find his late father's discharge papers.
It was this formal U.S. government, and I'm thinking, oh my God, I've been summoned to jury duty. So I opened this box, and there it is. And I just broke down. I couldn't. In fact, I didn't even come in.
Dennis, a state senator who represents Juneau, knew that his dad, Bill, was part of the Alaska Territorial Guard. Before serving as a delegate to the Constitutional Convention and then as the state's first governor, Bill Egan had flown planes during World War II. He even earned a medal for making it through a kamikaze attack. Dennis figured that his dad had been released from service when the war ended and that the papers had just been lost back in 1964.
I didn't have a clue. I thought all this stuff was just destroyed in the earthquake in their home in Valdez.
Bill Egan isn't the only member of the Territorial Guard not to have his discharge papers. He's one of 6,000. After the war, the guardsmen were thanked for their help with the effort, but there was no formal paperwork documenting that their service had come to an end.
They were busy. They weren't worried about. They were trying to protect us. They weren't too worried about fancy medals and crap back then, you know, and then things just were overlooked.
Back in 2000, Congress passed a bill to rectify that. It requires the Secretary of Defense to issue discharges to everyone who served in the Territorial Guard. Those papers let living guardsmen apply for benefits available to every other veteran of World War II, and they also carry a lot of emotional significance for family members of guardsmen who have already passed. Verdi Brown directs the Alaska Office of Veterans Affairs, and he's in charge of the effort. With so much time since the war, it's been tough tracking down every member of the Guard. He says that frequently, relatives of deceased guardsmen don't even realize that their family members served. That hit home at one ceremony he was involved in last year.
What caught me off guard was the crew chief that was on the Black Hawk helicopter that is currently serving in the Alaska National Guard stood there and did not realize that his grandfather had served in the Alaska Territorial Guard. He didn't know that we were presenting that medal to his grandfather when we flew in.
Brown says that the Territorial Guard was critical to the war effort and that there's no reason to treat them differently from veterans in other states. They came from 100 different communities across Alaska, stretching from Ketchikan to Barrow, and they served without pay. They picked up downed pilots, they reported on the movements of Japanese ships, and they shot down fire balloons. Dennis Egan wishes he knew more about that history and his father's time in the Territorial Guard. Bill died in 1984, and he didn't really talk much about the war when he was alive. That's part of why it was only this year that Dennis learned that his dad had never been discharged. He says that even though it's been so long since World War II and so long since his father passed, he's glad to have these papers now and thankful for the connection.
An enormous sense of relief, an enormous sense of closure.
In Juneau, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Kodiak students learn a new style of theater.
I think that I play it awesomely. I just get to sit there.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Children need at least 60 minutes of physical activity each day for good health. So to help your children hit that mark, find fun ways to add more activity to their day. Go for a walk together. Sign up for events in your community. Make time to be physically active as a family. Get out and play with your kids every day. For activity ideas and tips on raising healthy kids in Alaska, visit playeveryday.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Hundreds of Juneau residents flocked to the downtown waterfront Saturday to celebrate two major components of Southeast Alaska's economy, the Alaska Marine Highway System and the fishing industry. KTOO's Casey Kelly has more.
Alaska Marine Highway ferries haven't been a regular sight in downtown Juneau for about 30 years. But early Saturday morning, the Malaspina quietly sailed into a rainy Gastineau channel and tied up at a downtown dock, more likely these days to be hosting a cruise ship. The unusual trip into the heart of the capital city was part of the Malaspina's 50th anniversary Golden Voyage. Former Mayor Bruce Botello was the first passenger to disembark. He recalled being on one of the first Malaspina sailings out of downtown Juneau when he was just 15 years old.
We got to do a special sailing to Auk Bay. This was part of an Explorer Scouts color guard that got to ride. And of course, the Malaspina in the years since was the way we connected for sports events. It's the way we did debate tournaments. It really proved itself to be the Marine Highway.
Irene Cadiente was one of the few Juneau residents waiting to greet the Malaspina when it arrived at 6 a.m. Her late husband, Andres, was the vessel's first cook.
When the ship landed here, they hired him from the Bear Knob Hotel, and he worked on there until he retired. In fact, he wrote a cookbook, and it has a picture of Malaspina on there.
Cadiente says she and their children would often join her husband on trips up and down the inside passage.
At the time, they had a dining room in there, and they had waiters, and my son, the oldest one, also worked down there, and he was a waiter. So it has a lot of memories for us, and we're happy to see it here.
Are you coming to visit, or are you going with us to Tracy Yard?
We're going to visit.
All right. If you can have me come right over here and sign in at the table, please. Thank you very much.
By 8 a.m., about 250 Juneau residents lined up to tour the Malaspina, including the bridge and other areas usually off-limits to passengers. Another 400 people boarded by 10 a.m. for a special day cruise to Tracy Arm. On her way to the popular wildlife viewing fjord, the ferry participated in Juneau's annual Blessing of the Fleet, honoring the capital city's commercial fishing boats. Pastor Phil Campbell of Northern Light United Church did the blessing.
Bless now the ferry Malaspina on this celebratory voyage. Bless the crew and passengers, and bless our great state that has made the Marine Highway a reality.
Seven names were added to the Alaska Commercial Fishermen's Memorial as part of this year's ceremony: Charlie Clements, John Winther Jr., Tom and Dorothy Osborne, brothers Casey and Kelly Newman, and Eric McDowell, who founded the research firm McDowell Group. McDowell passed away last year at the age of 69 of complications from a staph infection. He joins his son Mark in being honored on the memorial. His other son Chris skippered his father's boat, the Whisper, during the blessing ceremony.
It's really a nice touch. He loved fishing, and did it, you know, right up to the end of his life. So, got the boat blessed and got tied up and got up here in time for the reading of the names. So, it's worked out pretty nicely.
McDowell says it's fitting that the Malaspina participated in this year's blessing. Over the years, the McDowell Group has made a name for itself researching the economic impact of both the commercial fishing industry and the state ferry system.
My dad was born in Southeast and spent his whole life here, so it's kind of part and parcel of being, you know, a Southeast resident. So half a century of ferry service, and for my dad, a little over half a century of fishing. So there was kind of a nice parallel there.
After its Tracy Arm cruise, the Malaspina was scheduled to return to downtown Juneau to drop off passengers, then head to the Auk Bay Ferry Terminal. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
A new turboprop aircraft will make it easier for a medical transport service to land in some Southeast Alaska communities. Airlift Northwest will operate a Turbo Commander as well as a Learjet between Juneau and rural communities. The turboprop will allow the medical service to fly into Gustavus, Skagway, Haines, Hoonah, Cake, and Prince of Wales Island. Juneau Director of Operations and Pilot Greg Clausen says the new plane is easier to land on those small-town shorter runways.
We'll stop shorter, take off shorter, operates better on one engine if you have an emergency. Just a fantastic platform performance-wise for pilot. Visibility from the cockpit is outstanding and from the back is outstanding. So going into these non-IFR, the visual airports is very important for terrain and other aircraft.
Airlift Northwest is a nonprofit company that's part of University of Washington Medicine. For more than 30 years, it has flown injured or critically ill patients from Southeast Alaska to Seattle or Anchorage. Clausen says the Turbo Commander will bring patients back to Juneau, where they will board the Learjet for the flight south or north. The new plane is similarly equipped to the Learjet, providing critical care in the air, says Juneau-based flight nurse Amy Center. She points out the specialized equipment on board.
We have a ventilator capacity. This is where our patient is, and then the two nurses would sit next to them. We also have a back seat, so capable to take a family member with us. And then back is the monitor, and then above, IV pumps and any other equipment we would use. So anything you would see in a critical care here in our aircraft.
Airlift Northwest is one of two medical transport services operating out of Juneau. Guardian Flight now shares a hangar with Airlift at the Juneau Airport, but this summer, Airlift Northwest will build its own facility next door. The Turbo Commander was recently opened to the public, and Assemblymember Lauren Jones stopped by. He recalled when his son, age 9 at the time, got hurt on a school playground and had to be medevaced to Harborview Medical Center in Seattle. It was 1982.
We medevaced out on a 737 cargo combo, and I bought 9 seats on the airplane. The nurse, myself, and the stretcher with my son, the Harborview. So people had to give up their seats, and I had to buy all the airplane seats on a one-way, plus, you know, the ambulance rides. And he's fine, but it was a pretty traumatic experience. So these kind of jets look a little bit nicer than the back of a 737.
A medevac to Seattle is about $50,000. Many health insurance plans, including Medicare and Medicaid, cover much of the cost. Medevac services also provide insurance programs of their own, as well as charity care.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com. Every day, people all over Alaska are discovering that public transportation can benefit their businesses and their communities. Public transportation in Alaska provides 7 million rides a year to work, medical appointments, shopping, school, and social opportunities. There's more information at alaskamobility.org. This message sponsored by the nonprofit organizations Alaska Mobility Coalition and the American Public Transportation Association.
In our ongoing series about culture in Alaska, we've been talking about how we define ourselves and live our lives as Alaskans. Last week, we asked how long you have to live here to call yourself an Alaskan. In many of our state's communities, there's a transient population, seasonal workers or folks in town for a finite term of service at a job or as a volunteer. They're not going to stay beyond a year or two, at least they don't plan to. But as Ed Ronco found out in Sitka, just because they're short-timers doesn't mean they don't belong.
It's a Tuesday night at the Bayview Pub in Sitka. Trivia night. The place is packed and divided into several teams. One is called Cash for Cats. Nobody asks what that means. A few other team names aren't radio-friendly. And over near the corner of the room is a team called They're Busy.
It stemmed from trying to get a team name from some of the other people in the group, and they weren't really paying attention. And
They were like, they're busy. So that's what we landed with.
Garrett Bauer, along with most of the rest of his trivia team, is a volunteer with AmeriCorps, the service organization established by the federal government. More than 15 of them are stationed in Sitka. Bauer graduated from the University of New Hampshire last year and, like most of his classmates, started looking for jobs.
I wasn't really thinking outside of New England, really. I was, not that I'm a homebody, but I like the area around there and I like the food culture in New Hampshire and in Vermont.
But sooner or later, he got a call from the AmeriCorps director in Sitka. 3 weeks later, he was on a plane to Alaska, about as far away from New Hampshire as a guy can get and still be in the United States.
I really love it here.
When Bauer arrived in Sitka in October, his plane was met by another AmeriCorps member.
But, you know, he brought us all right over to the brewery, and, you know, we got just a beer and some sandwiches, and it was a nice just, you know, the first thing, you know, just being able to have that sense of community.
In Sitka, AmeriCorps members form an instant community. It helps that most of them live in the same house, but also that they're involved in everything. Not literally everything, of course, but it's hard to live in Sitka and not encounter AmeriCorps members. They clean up after big events. They volunteer as ushers at the Performing Arts Center. They're in the schools. They're working at the gym. They take tickets at Sitka's monthly town talent show. They're all over the place. And Bauer says that is how he learned to feel at home.
While we have our own kind of thing going on, I think we're really spread out within the community, and I think that's our biggest benefit.
When I moved here, I immediately fell into the community.
That is Jasmine Shaw. She came to Sitka a few years back as an AmeriCorps member, and when her term was up, she stayed.
Any place that I've moved else, you know, other times in my life, I've always felt like I can adapt easily, but that it was never that immediate. It was like I arrived in Sitka, and then a week later, somehow, I was involved in all these things.
Shaw has a graduate degree in forestry and environmental resources and some work experience at the International Institute of Tropical Forestry in Puerto Rico.
So when I looked at AmeriCorps, all the positions I originally looked at were environmentally related. And then I stumbled upon this one that was adult education in Sitka, totally out of my field, but thought, well, why not?
And now she's working at the University of Alaska Southeast. She says the AmeriCorps volunteers continue to be her friends, even though she's no longer in the program.
In Sitka, you know, we're all kind of in that young age group together, and so it's a natural group to hang out with anyhow.
The AmeriCorps members in Sitka, both those engaged in service now and those who decided to stay when their terms expired, they work as a team. They know each other, they hang out together, they eat meals together, and they help each other through the goods and bads that come with living in a beautiful part of the world that's far from where most of them grew up. When Garrett Bauer is done with his service, he plans to travel with some friends. But for now, he belongs to this special subculture of Sitka, AmeriCorps members who stick together on the job or in a trivia battle with other Sitkins.
We knew the last question in bed at all, so.
That last question? In his job since 1984, this person was known as the Prince Who Awakened Sleeping Beauty.
We ended up tying for second.
Reporting in Michael Eisner. The answer was Michael Eisner, you know, the former Disney CEO. I can't believe you didn't know that. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
Our series on culture in Alaska is made possible by the Alaska Humanities Forum. Students at the Kodiak High School and Middle School dabbled in theatric storytelling last week. A handful of classrooms participated in a 2-week Artist in Schools program that culminated with a presentation of their work on Thursday. KMXT's Brianna Gibbs attended the performance and filed this report.
It's about 2 p.m. on Thursday afternoon, and the foyer at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium is abuzz with students from the Kodiak Middle School. Groups of 7th and 8th graders are putting the finishing touches on a series of tableaus, the final product of 2 weeks working with visiting teaching artist Ryan Conroe.
I'm here as a theater teaching artist, and we're doing a project with middle, high, and high school classrooms on using drama-based activities for integrating with academic content.
Conroe has a rich background in theater, both as a teacher and performer. He's worked with the Alaska State Council on the Arts Artists in Schools program for about 10 years and taught in districts around the last frontier. In Kodiak, Conroe had middle school students interview family members about their first job as part of the program.
And that's related to their unit that's happening this spring on career preparation. And we've been taking some of the stories from those interviews and dramatizing them.
The students reenacted the stories through a series of tableaus. But what exactly is a tableau?
A tableau is basically a picture formed with actors. It's still, besides the fact that you switch between scenes, you'll have usually four or five people, and you'll take elements from the story and you'll act them out silently in a picture.
That's seventh grader Eli Griffin, who interviewed his dad, Kodiak Island Borough Assemblyman Aaron Griffin.
He worked at Papa John's Pizzeria, and then he went into the Air Force.
Griffin said his dad's past with Papa John's isn't the topic of his group's tableau.
We're doing one about Paperboy's first job, I'm pretty sure. I'm a newspaper.
That's an important role. Are you ready for it?
I think that I play it awesomely. I just get to sit there.
I worked on a paper route. I was a paper delivery boy. I thought it was going to be really easy, but it turned
out to be a few final tweaks, the students hit the stage and their interviews come to life.
Really heavy, especially on Sundays when all the advertisements were in the paper.
And the students shuffle into intricate telling positions. Three frozen scenes later, the story is told.
And relax, give them a hand.
For Griffin, the experience has opened his eyes to a new form of acting. He said he's always been a part of theater, but he didn't realize the power of a solid position.
And I think it's really cool to be able to act without actually moving and speaking, and it seems to me like it's a lot more powerful.
Conroe, who is based in Juneau, wrapped up his two-week artist residency on Friday. During his time in Kodiak, he also worked with Kodiak High School students on dramatic representations of personal essays. And as for Eli Griffin's portrayal of the newspaper, he was indeed awesome. In Kodiak, I'm Brianna Gibbs.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Stephanie Joyce in Unalaska, Mark Earhart in Bethel, Casey Kelly and Rosemarie Alexander in Juneau, Ed Ronco in Sitka, and Brianna Gibbs in Kodiak. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. The Alaska Energy Authority encourages you to renovate right this spring. Alaskans spend up to 50% of their income on energy. For energy-saving tips, visit akenergyefficiency.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Energy Authority. The School of Management at the University of Alaska Southeast has accounting degrees online to prepare students with the skills required by Alaska's industries. Learn more at uas.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by University of Alaska Southeast. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance. The Alaska Public Radio Network, in cooperation with our member stations, provides the most complete, timely, and accessible source of Alaska news, current affairs, and cultural information.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.